Artist for Artists. Transcendence München. Commitment to Contemporary Dance. Side Talks. Let's talk about dance. The Transcendence Podcast. Today, choreographer Moritz Ostrużniak and journalist Corinna Frizziero.
We are here with the dancer and choreographer Moritz Ostrużniak to talk about his latest works and his way of viewing and doing dance.
Hi, my name is Moritz Ostrużniak and I'm a freelance choreographer based in Munich.
Can you tell me something about your background as a skater and breakdancer?
I was a rollerblader, semi-professional, when I was about 13 or something. It was in the 90s when the rollerblades started to be first in fashion. So not the roller skates, but the rollerblades, the one that are in one line. So I was always in this kind of urban environment. And through that, again, through friends in school, I got involved in sort of the hip-hop culture and started to become a graffiti artist. And that was basically what introduced me to breakdance as well. Before, dance didn't interest me so much, a part of Michael Jackson.
Can you tell me some memories that you have of your breakdancing past? Like, did you do any breakdancing battles or something like that?
Oh, yeah, a lot, actually. I mean, it was a very, it's a very different way of dancing together than you would do like in a more concert context or where you would, when you would go to a classical ballet lesson or to any other dance lesson. To say that during that time, which is about 25 years ago when I started breakdancing, there was no really like a school or something you could go to when you would learn it. So you would usually go to youth centers, and there would be different youth centers in Munich in different areas. And, for example, in one in Berg am Laim, there was one we could always use the space to do our practice, the jams, let's say from 6 to 10 or something on Friday. And then in the other one in Biederstein, which was close to Münchner Freiheit, we could go there on Tuesday and Thursday or so. So we would always go every day to a different kind of youth center. And that's where you could learn it. And there was basically no teacher, nobody. You would just go there and young kids, also young adults would just practice it. And you would go there and you would, you know, look. There was no YouTube, so there was no videos really, or you had very little videos, of course, from where you could learn. So you would learn a lot from each other, or like watching a video on a VHS cassette till it basically it's, you know, so grisly that you can't see nothing anymore. But yeah, the environment is different to learn. You just ask, oh, can you show me this trick, or can you show me this basic step? Or so you would just pass on the things like that.
But that's amazing, to be honest, having these little kids just getting together and learning by themselves and helping others. Yeah, that's the right passion of dancing. Yeah. But I also wanted to talk to you about Maurice Béjart, because Maurice Béjart is one of the most important dancers and choreographers of our time, who really helped write the history of dance. And you studied with him. So can you tell me something about that experience?
Well, I mean, that was for me, in a way, mind-blowing, I have to say, since I was here in Munich and, you know, I was a little breakdancer, and then I studied contemporary dance here in a school in Munich for 2 years. But it was a rather closed environment, let's say, here at the school. It was not really, didn't have a big international sort of focus. And then suddenly, then I wanted to go somewhere else. So I did all kinds of auditions, and I found that school because my stepfather, who's an actor, he had this video of Maurice Béjart, I remember, also on a VHS cassette that he showed me. And then I figured out he had a school, and I figured out that it was actually for free to go there if they accept you. I was a bit old at that time already because you know, usually people would go there when they are 16 or something like that. And I was already 20 or something. So it was already very, very much on the edge. So, but I thought, well, why not? Let's try. And then I did the audition and I got accepted, which was, of course, fantastic. And for me, really a mind opening in a sense of how to look at dance. What I realized after was that it was less about the aesthetics or which kind of style of dance he would do that would be so significant for me, but more or less his approach to dance that already at that time was way more open already in the classical context than now, like than what he was doing with his company or what he was even doing in the 60s already was much more challenging many kind of different things in our society. And that, of course, was very inspiring for me. And you would train there suddenly with world stars. The school was in the same building than the company. There were four studios. So sometimes you would come out of class and suddenly Sylvie Guillem would come to train there or study a role. So we would all be like, oh, wow. So it was really extreme for me, coming from this breakdance and from this environment in Munich, which was, I have to unfortunately say, rather a bit more provincial in a sense, than coming to this suddenly international dance context where all these stars come to rehearse and with Maurice or things like that. So it was, of course, and which was highly international.
But talking about your approach to choreographies, the digital world really interests you. And how are you using it in your choreographies?
I copy and paste. So basically, I'm trying to kind of appropriate or like use the social media or like digital media strategies. And I was kind of trying to use them or appropriate them for bringing them back into real life, appropriate them for dance or using them for dance. And how is that possible in a way? So that you have, of course, when you think about scrolling, if you think about how long a video lasts, so all these kind of things would sort of inspire me, say, to use it and to be more concrete in a way. Because for me to start working with it is also a bit, it's a self-observation, of course, because I realize, as we all, I guess, we spend more time with the screen, on the screen. There's more dance available on the screen constantly. Like, it's a big archive. It's a big bibliothèque of sort of available stuff from good to bad, you know. So it spans this big range. And I was asking myself at that time also what kind of movement language I would like to do. And I realized that I somehow don't have had a movement language, or was still looking. And then I realized, why do I have to have one sort of movement language? Why I don't try to work with all languages, which is literally basically impossible. The first steps towards this was I asked the dancers to collect 20 videos from YouTube, Vimeo, Instagram, TikTok. And each video has to do with dance. And out of each video, I would ask the dancers to pick 3 seconds of a movement, a step, a little gesture. And then they would pick this and then we would put it together. So you would basically have every 3 seconds a different movement. So the dancers would basically go from one thing to another.
So it's a close collaboration with your dancers. Like, you work always together to create a choreography. It's not just you telling them what to do, but it's also them telling you what they would like to have.
Yeah, of course. This is in this particular way that I'm working now. It's also important for me. I could, of course, also collect all the videos by myself and choose the parts and then tell the dancers, learn this and this and that, or learn it beforehand and show it to them. But for me, what was more interesting in this process is also to know what do they choose online and what does it tell about them, which video they choose, what that in return does to the choreography. So it's also always, it's a very, very close collaboration. Like, dances are inevitable for the creative process because it's a ping pong. They give me ideas, I give them ideas. And this is how I feel also that the work keeps on living and is not just, you know, stagnating because it's just sort of my mind there. But you try to connect with all the other people and see what is their input. And with the videos, it is, of course, also like always a chance operation, let's say. Because I don't know sometimes which videos the dancer will pick. So that will like... It's like when you are walking at the sea, you know, suddenly there's all this stuff laying and you're like, oh, this is interesting. This little stick looks like this. And then you start to arrange them, play with them, or zoom in on a certain movement that you didn't even thought of.
So for you, not only the digital world is something important to look at, but also at how people and, let's say, society more in general behave or something like that, and then connect them together, so to say.
Yeah, I mean, it's what's very interesting for me. How does it affect us, of course? You know, what does it do with us? How does it change us? How does it change our senses? How does it change our attention span, our sense of listening, communicating with each other? So it's really like, what does it do to our senses, to us, to our interaction? Yeah, and that interests me to sort of investigate. I don't know how meaningful that all is, but it's also, in a sense, it's for me sort of, yeah, an exploration in a way. And then, you know, we don't know any answers, or I would not claim to have any answers. We just, it's a lot of trial and error.
Now I would like to talk about Tanzanweisung, the piece that you presented at the Bayerisches Staatsoper. You called your piece Dance Instructions. Why have you chosen this title?
Because it is. One, just as I have been just talking about the sort of process, it is the same in this piece. I ask Daniel, the performer, to choose 20 videos and out of each video to choose not longer than 3 seconds, a little part, and copy that movement and then put that together. And I asked him to do that over 800 times. So he basically, the video consists out of 800 different little snippets from different dance movements from all over the place, from boxing to cheerleading to political gestures, sports, dance, film, everything. that's what I did. I gave him a dance instruction, an instruction to dance instruction, how to write, so to say, the movement, since it's almost a little bit like an automatic process. When I give the task, the choreography writes itself also automatically. It's almost an algorithmic process when you say like, what if blah, 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 blah. It was also done during the corona crisis, or like during the at the end of the first lockdown we did it. So it also, of course, has a sort of reference to maybe not just to him a dance instruction, but to us a dance instruction to sort of keep on dancing or keep on moving.
How did you work with space in this choreography? Because you have your dancer alone on the stage, but the public is not sitting where he's supposed to be sitting in the theater, but directly on the stage. So why that idea?
That was more coincident, actually. The dramaturg that I had have been contact already from the Staatsoper, she called me and she said, oh, we do this format and we are changing the stage around. So the setting was already somehow there. Was not necessarily somehow my idea to have this setting. That was sort of the setting that was there. And then they said, yeah, we can build this thing. And during that time, you have to think that it was very difficult to make anything. You know, it was lockdown. You could meet just with two people. So that's why also solo or with one other person, you know. So there was not, was very limited to do. So I kind of went with it. I just said, yeah, okay, let's do it, you know. And if it was not working, then it's like that, you know, who cares? So we came to the space and this was already the setup. Okay, the people sit there on stage with the distance, 50 people. And then they said, we can build this little platform. I said, oh yeah, cool. We use the platform how it is. We don't, you know, usually you would come as an artist and say, I can do like this and that. So I was not even fiddling around a lot with things. The only thing I wanted was these lights around. So it gives this sort of thing. And then I started to work with this idea, this one person in this, in this one space or in this room or in this ring or in all the associations that you sort of can have with this thing sort of moving through all kinds of different dance styles.
What about the boxing references? Was that just an idea of your dancer to show you those types of videos, or does it have a meaning behind it?
No, I mean, the movements, they all came from the dancer, which was, as I said before, for me, very important that it is not just, it's like a painting instruction or it's like a dance instruction. So it was for me important. What does it tell about him? What does he like? What does he not like? And to let go of that control, as in a choreographer also, of being like, okay, I like this, I like that, I like that. I mean, I had the chance, of course, to work with a fantastic dancer. He's really, really an amazing dancer. Very creative, very strong physical performer, very funny, very theatrical, also very talented. So, of course, that influenced the thing. But for me, it was also interesting to have like him inside and to have all these movements. And then I have to sort of, it was almost more like an editing process, you know, in a sense, rather than a classical choreographic process where you would say, I do this movement, do the movement exactly how I want it. And then I'll have to find the meaning within. So, or I have to manipulate the movement or change the orders or space the movement different in space.
What do you mean with that sign in the middle of the choreography saying, after a while, we will stop thinking about it?
Means kind of everything, which I thought was kind of course, giving a reference to the pandemic in the moment, but there's also many things that after a while we will stop thinking about it, which could be a personal breakup, which could be even war, which could be some natural disasters, or we just, you know, I think that's how we are. So we just stop thinking about it.
So it's always a message to the public that you include.
Ah, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's very placative. Of course, since I walk with these billboards which say news on top, like it is some sort of news, and underneath stands, then after a while we will stop thinking about it. I also thought it was interesting that it has some sort of reference to news, to fake news, or it's like, because there was all these news constantly around us, this and corona that and blah, 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 and disaster here and disaster that and fake here and right here. And so I thought it just worked very well on different levels, which is very important for my work, that you cannot assign only one meaning to it, but that it has multiple layers of meaning or interpretation, so the viewer can see different things inside.
You always include something provocative in your pieces, like a middle finger, an invite to applaud, a dancer sticking their hand in their trousers, songs about dictators. Why is that?
Because it's part of our life. Every day I see things that provoke me, or I think that are things that are provoking us. And I feel it wrong not to include that. We feel it's like, I don't know. I felt it always strange when I do something on stage and I just show the good part. I just feel that's not life, or that's not what surrounds us. There's things that annoy me. There's things that I like, that are things that are beautiful, that are things that I find disgusting. Besides my personal viewpoint, I think these things exist. You know, it doesn't mean necessarily if I put them on stage that I agree with that. I think that's maybe important to say, but that's not the point. The point is to put them and to say that is part of it. Yeah.
Well, this actually brings me to talk about yesterday now, because you focus on something provocative at its best, like political manifestations and propaganda. Can you tell me more about the idea behind this choreography?
Again, it's a bit, a corona birth. Because it was just after we did Tanzanweisung, the solo. And of course, there was very little dance. And I felt in that time I wanted to go not smaller. I thought I want to do something very, very big against all odds. I thought the solo was good now, but I want to do something very big. So, and it was very interesting because during that time, there was all these big spaces available that are usually not available to us. Let's say as a freelance choreographer, it's very difficult to get the Philharmonic Hall in the Gasthaik to do a choreography, which the rental prices are astronomical usually. And usually they're booked from the next 2 years with big orchestras and big stars, you know, performing there. So, and they were all empty, and there could not be a big audience, and there could not be a big orchestra. So, but we could with six dancers because there's enough space and enough distance and blah, blah, blah. So that was the first initiation. I thought, okay, I want to continue with this reverse setting, but I want to take it further because in Tanzanweisung, there was a platform and the empty auditorium would be the background. And we would, as a viewer, look from the stage to the dancer who would dance on a little platform, and in the back would be the empty auditorium. And in the Philharmonic, I wanted to take it further that the dancers also inhabit the auditorium. That was the first, let's say, the first idea, actually. There was not even a provoking idea, let's say, at first. At first was more the space and this idea of like continuing with something bigger. And then I think some ideas derived also out of Tanzanweisung, there where we also had billboards or this sort of first ideas of very placative messages that are sort of provoking or that contradict each other or that are coming from the right, from the extreme right, from the extreme left, and they're clashing and tons of stuff in the middle. And we also all don't know anymore what the hell this is and what is it all mean and how to deal with this somehow. I think it's just a snapshot of the now. I just felt so annoyed by all of that polarization constantly, you know. Everything was just like, you know, the internet is also this very big marketplace, no? Like where everybody screams out his opinion. So we sort of try to work with that. And we really try to work also more with extremes there. So there's a lot of things, sort of extreme political opinions that are sort of, they clash, but they're sort of no moral. The piece has no, there's no moral of the story, let's say. There is no pedagogy inside. It's not like telling you this is good or this is bad. For me, it was just more interesting to use this and artistically let these things sort of contradict each other also, because that's what I felt was this time, you know. I felt it was not so interesting to tell people this is good then. And this is bad. I don't believe so much I can change people's mind in a theater according to that. But for me, it's more interesting to show than a social process where we're in and maybe criticize even my own position in a way as well.
In this piece, Yesterday Now, there's always this dichotomy of hiding, like behind the seats or the signs, and being very open either by undressing or by showing protest signs. Why is that?
Well, I think we hide behind messages as well. We hide behind sort of our online personalities and scream out things and say our opinions, and much easier than we maybe would when face to face. But we also make ourselves naked, no? I think, you know, we show all most private things. And I guess it existed already before, you know, that we sort of hide behind slogans and messages and, you know, propagandas, and also show ourselves very, you know, very naked to another. So I think just maybe the internet amplifies that, I guess, or makes it easier for people to do that.
How are you using music in your choreographies, and especially in Yesterday Now?
It started maybe two pieces before Yesterday Now that I changed my approach to music. And I think in Yesterday Now, I tried to use it more extreme. First of all, I was trying to go another way. I was trying to work more with popular music, or that has in general more popular context for different reasons. And I would also use more music that has lyrics because I felt that if I use a song that is sort of anchored in a certain period or has already is connected to a certain history and period, I could add different meanings onto what I would do. So there's like kind of many different levels of meaning that the music brings. So I would use that to sort of also play with that meaning by showing maybe pictures before of choreography of fighting jets on the video, or we cut together images of violent images out of like popular culture or like things for kids. And the music sort of helped me to combine Elvis with the image of Adolf Hitler at the same time. Suddenly you would read the Elvis lyrics according to the image, to this little, you know, emoticon of Hitler that was on a sign where a dancer was constantly hiding behind.
There are some moments in your choreographies where it seems like your dancers can experiment with the acting or the choreography themselves. Do you leave them this possibility to improvise, or is everything actually fought down to the detail?
Yes and no. We improvise, of course, in the process a lot on how to find material. Later it is set, most of it. But it's also always, it's always a balance. Like, it depends. Some scenes, they demand more freedom for the dancers, and some things demand very, like, that everything is exactly like that. I use many methods, let's say, in that sense. But most of it, it's written, let's say. It's not already thought before, that I would not say. But then when we develop the material and I know, okay, this is what we need to do, and then it basically, I'll say, okay, you go there and you do that, and you sing this song here, and then you go back and hide. Or the dancers propose it in the moment when we create. They're like, I could also, you know, jump behind the chairs. And you know, if it's a good idea, then it wins. You know, the best idea always wins. That doesn't mean necessarily it's all my ideas in the piece. So the best idea has to win.
I would like to talk about your choreography, Terminal Beach, where we are met at the beginning with a rather dystopian atmosphere and synthwave music. In this choreography, you give each dancer a lot of individuality. Even when they are performing in groups and sharing the same stage together, they are, for the most part, not synchronized, and each of them is doing different movements. Is there a reason why?
Well, they are synchronized, but they are more synchronized in a sort of reverse movement, since we have been working a lot with reversing movements or using, again, videos that we find online that we like, and we would just reverse them. And since Terminal Beach, it's... It was premiered in a big hall, which is 60 meters deep and 20 meters wide or something like this. So it was, for me, very interesting to have the dancers sort of go backwards. So they would be less synced in a way of like as in a unisono movement where each dancer does exactly the same movement. Everything is sort of synced and thought out, but it is less a unisono movement. Still don't know exactly why. I just felt what for me more interesting was this sort of to give a sense of a backwards forward motion. So this idea of that we move backwards forwards, that was a feeling I had. So it's again, like all pieces have to do a lot. What is sort of maybe my impression of time we're living in, or again, like sort of a snapshot of the now. And from that on, I try to project a bit into the future and try to see what could that tell me about what could happen to us or with us. And then I'm trying to sort of find a way to realize that in within movement or with the performers or with, let's say, video or different medias within the piece. They would always reverse into something. They would reverse and then suddenly be cowboys, or they would reverse and then be knights or something. So we would try to work with sort of the past.
So the characters of the cowboy and the knight is something taken from the past. So it always connects with this backward, forward motion. And it's not something that has a meaning actually behind it.
Oh, no, it has a meaning. No, it's also very symbolic. That's why I chose them also. I mean, they're very obvious also, cowboys, you know, and cowboys stand for something also, you know, or this sort of macho mentality, you could say, or, you know, or what cowboys stand for in the past, you know. And I like to bring that much more into focus, let's say, or with the knights also, that could also be astronauts. And at the same time, like, are they knights or these silver things? Yeah. But is that then forward or not? Like, are they medieval, or is it the future, or are we going towards a medieval future? So that's more maybe what interests me, or like to ask that question, to bring back old stereotypes somehow and to play with them also in a way of ironically also.
There's a constant change of scenery, themes and way of dancing in this choreography. Why is that? For example, we switch from a skating part to another part of with the knights, but it all happens very, very quickly.
But I think this is very much, again, I think it's maybe something I was trying to take further that I was working with in the movement language, where I was trying to switch from, or I asked the dancers to switch from different styles to acting to different, from different dance styles also, let's say. So I was trying to see, is it possible, or what would interest me? And it happened already before in Yesternow also, for example, that there was a lot of scene changes somehow, almost like numbers a bit, you know, almost like old theater. It was for me interesting to see, can I combine like different genres, or can I give a, you know, could we do some sort of obvious dance theater behaving like cowboys, and in the next moment we switch and we go into an abstract dance composition, let's say. In the next moment we switch again and we have flags in our, and we do a flag dance like cheerleaders would do at the Super Bowl, let's say, you know, and then we switch again and suddenly we are riding horses, and then suddenly we switch and we're on roller skates. So I feel this very much sort of the, to me, how I see, how I am online also, or how we see online, everything is constantly changing from one video to another. And I was trying to implement that sort of appropriate this strategy and using it for dance somehow, instead of having one, you know, continuous, or let's say one slow metamorphosis that could happen over duration in a dance performance. I was like, okay, boom, next. And the idea was also to try sort of a concrete surprise, like it is always, you kind of understand it and it's kind of obvious, but it's happening at a moment where you don't expect it, and you don't expect that to happen at that sort of thing. So I play with expectation, let's say, also, or I try, let's say, to play with expectation according to how the piece is built. Yeah.
So it's like scrolling on your phone, but this time is in the theater. You're scrolling through the dance movements.
Yeah, it's a doom scrolling. So it's really like, I felt like that's a bit also Terminal Beach, it's also like scrolling, doom scrolling, but it's like forward, back. You don't know anymore what's forward, what's backward. The things all come at you, you know, and we don't know anymore what does it all mean, and what does it do for me, and why is it like drugs that I can't kind of constantly have to be on it, you know? I mean, again, it's all things that we all know. I'm not claiming to be a scientist in my work. I think it's all things we experience and we all know, and they're probably already well researched. But for me, it's again interesting to see, to appropriate that and bring it back also into reality, and then see what it does with us. Take it further and, like, you know, play with it, and then see what new could come out that we didn't thought of.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but there's a part where your dancers are using flag as props, and the only sound you can hear is the one given by the flagpole hitting the floor. This part really reminded me of Petit Mort from Jiri Killian. Is that the right reference? Is that the copy and paste principle?
Interesting. Now that you say it, could be, actually. Could be, but it is not, to be honest. It was, for me, what interested me more was, I guess it was similar than what Jiri Killian did. What was interesting was the sound of the flag, the fabric in the wind that you would hear, and the falling of the flag, of the material. I like it gives you a different sensorial experience as in a viewer also. And I try also to incorporate things like this also, because sometimes there's music all over it, and you hear the music and you see the dance, you know, in a way, let's say. But here you don't hear the dance so much. And this is what I liked about this flag section, that we would hear the dance or the choreography.
When you think about dance and trends, what comes to mind?
Dance is trends. I always have to think about trends in as in losing yourself, or as in maybe less as in an individual activity and more as a collective activity. I guess it works maybe also, you can dance yourself into a trance also, I guess, alone. But when I think about dance, I always have to think about the collective and like different sort of collective activities, I think, and the good and the bad that it brings with it. I think a marching, like a military march, could be also a trance where you have to march for many hours within a whole group of other soldiers, and you have to do exactly the same thing. I imagine this has also a very like trance-like feeling, as in the same as maybe dancing in a club collectively with others and sweating, where everybody is moving individually, but somehow it wouldn't make sense if you would just do it by yourself at home. You somehow need the energy of the others. Moving in time together somehow makes us bond physically, creates, I believe, a physical bond. We bond physically in a way. And that creates community, but that can create different kinds of communities, let's say, towards the positive, as we know, and also towards the liberation, maybe, or a spiritual, you know, liberation, or and something. Also, it can also go to very extreme, you know, make the people lose their mind, losing themselves within the group in order to, you know, fight for the greater good, whatever that may be.
Do you see yourself using the copy and paste principle again in your choreography, or maybe has it some limits?
Oh, definitely has limits. And I'm fighting also with the limits of it. But I guess that's with everything. You find something that is that you think is interesting investigating in dance, you know, or like for yourself. Think like, oh, that's interesting, or this language or this way of moving. And then it gets redundant after a while. So you have to sort of refresh it and experiment with it. So I had my moments of where I felt like maybe it's enough. But then I don't know, if I look around, I feel it's not enough. This is somehow the way we experience them now a lot. Online. So I just keep on experimenting with it, with the dances together, how we can continue working with that. It becomes sometimes redundant, as in not finding new videos that we could copy, or but then sometimes you also realize, yeah, why not do it again, the same step? Because actually it doesn't matter, because it's in another context, in another meaning. So the same thing, the same dance step from some pop movement that we have used previously in this new context has a completely new meaning again. Or we would try to, like already in Terminal Beach, to work in a way less recognizable, since we would use, would learn the videos in reverse, which is very challenging in coordination for the dancers and stuff like this. So we try to sort of play with that and play maybe more open with that. Again, it's a trial and error. I experiment. If I feel like we get bored, I experiment a lot with it and see what new could come out. And sometimes I also don't know immediately if what that could mean, or, you know, it's not like, because we talked a lot about meaning and even my choreography, but often things also come out of the process. It's not like I go in the studio and I know already what I will do. I know some things, or I have a feeling of it more. It's more instinctive. It's less, you know, the dancer A is going to do this and dancer B, or blah, 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 blah. Or Daniel is going to dance here and jump there. No, it's more a feeling, a sensation of things, like a gut feeling, let's say, that then I'll somehow have to trust during the process that is there's value or there is something in it, and then I follow it.
Well, thank you very much, Moritz, for being here and let us know all the insights of your work. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
More podcasts and interviews about dance in Munich can be found at the TTMag on tanztendenz.de. The Tanztendenz podcast Side Talks is supported by the National Performance Network Stepping Out, funded by the Federal Government Commissioner for Culture and the Media in the context of the initiative Neustart Kultur, Hilfsprogramm Tanz, as well as by the Cultural Department of the City of Munich.